Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. When it comes to baseball in upstate New York, Cooperstown has long been the center of the universe. But with opening day on the horizon, the Albany Institute of History and Art is getting into the game for the first time in its history. Three baseball exhibitions are open there now through the end of July, including Baseball America's Game, a traveling exhibition organized by Bank of America's Art in Our Communities program, Play Ball, Baseball in the Capital Region, and The Clubhouse, Baseball Memorabilia. Baseball in the Capital Region dates back to the 1860s, and the exhibits are home to sights and sounds of baseball here and around the world, both past and present. Around Albany, there's a lot of baseball past, and this exhibit shines a light on the area's semi-pro and Negro League teams, the Eastern League's Albany Senators, whose home Hawkins Stadium saw Ruth, Gehrig, and Yogi pass through, and other scraps of long-gone teams, players, fields, and fans. I recently took a guided tour on a day when two former minor leaguers from Albany's past came to visit their artifacts on display.
My name is Frank Stossett, great shortstop for the Albany Senators. I'm age 92 with eyes of blue.
Stossett and Albany Senators teammate Babe Daskalakis played in the same infield at Old Hawkins Stadium 60 years ago.
I fell in love with the area, fooled my wife, and have four kids and 14 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. How about that?
While they were touring the exhibit, some fans who remembered seeing them play happened to be visiting the museum. For many people, baseball fandom doesn't end with childhood.
Pat D'Amelio, I'm also from Albany, my whole life, and enjoyed watching the Albany Senators and several of the other baseball teams, Diamond Dogs and the old Albany Colony Yankees at Heritage Park.
Anthony Chapa from Albany originally, still all these years. And Pat and I were cousins, 17 days apart, and we used to go to Hawkins Stadium with our fathers, used to bring us. We had a lot of great times, saw Frankie Stossett play, Freddie Lanifaro, Babe Daskalakis, great infielders they were. And I remember there were so many people would come to the ballpark on a Sunday. In those days, a lot of men didn't have cars. So United Traction Company, Albany Bus Company, down in front of the D&H building on Broadway, would have about 7 or 8 or 9 buses waiting for all the fans to get on a bus and then take us up to Hawkins Stadium to see the games. And after the games, the buses were waiting for us. And we go back down to, you know, D&H building. Then they take their own buses to get back home. It was a popular sport way back.
Executive Director Tamas Groft says the museum looked to complement the touring Baseball America's Game with a local exhibit.
We did a call to the community for things that they have in the collection related to Major League Baseball. And it's an amazing array of materials, fans and players. So that was really the concept for the exhibition, and to do it in 5,000 square feet. And as you can see, things are still continuing to come in. And there was also a decision to borrow from locally and from our community rather than borrowing from a lot of museums.
My guides were Anya Leder-Nagy, the museum's marketing associate, and Siena College student Andrew Lang, who worked on the exhibit as an intern and is continuing as a volunteer. The baseball exhibits are just one floor of the museum's space, and there's too much to describe in one radio story, but it's baseball. So how about some highlights?
So these pieces in this room, this is like the 19th century history in the Capital Region. One of the pieces that is of particular interest is some of the 19th century materials, including scorecards. There is a scrapbook of all sorts of things related to baseball in this area that's from the Rensselaer County Historical Society's collection. John Thorne, the official baseball historian for Major League Baseball, was here earlier in February to give a talk, and he came into this room and he was really excited about this scrapbook in particular. He hadn't seen some of the material before in other contexts, and so he actually was able to spend some time looking through it while he was here.
Unless you think that baseball gives you immortality, I'll just note that one of the pages here says unknowns versus mutuals. The Mutuals of Pennsylvania playing the unknowns of this place, Friday, August 7th. What year was this?
The scrapbook's from 1868 to 1869. And so it's actually a city directory, which was used to paste the information in, and that's like a handbill of promoting the exhibition game, Unknowns versus Mutuals.
And it's at a time when baseball was two words.
Yes.
Probably my favorite part, baseball in the Capital Region includes artifacts from the Albany Colony Yankees, where the roots of the Major League club's 1990s dynasty were planted.
The Albany Colony Yankees played in this area from 85 to 94, and we have a number of materials here related to their time here. We have autographs relating to their final season when Derek Jeter, Andy Pettit, and Mariano Rivera each played here. Some jerseys, bats, things of that sort. Now, related to that final season, I think really the impetus to talk about the Albany Colony Yankees came when we got in touch with an individual named Peter Rokich, who was a Albany Colony Yankees fan for many years. And in 94, he found out the team was leaving. So what he elected to do, along with some other fans, including Peter and Mickey McAllister, was to start kind of a booster club to kind of commemorate the final season and to kind of ease the transition out. And they spent a decent amount of time with Derek and Andy and Mariano and, you know, helped them out as, you know, young minor league players just starting out. Yes, but we have a number of great materials from these players, too, and such as... This is an interesting piece up here. It's a bat that has Derek Jeter's face carved into it, if you can see right up there. Now, that was made by a local bat maker that Peter Rokich got in touch with. And he told me, there's only three in existence right now. One is in the Baseball Hall of Fame. One is owned by Derek Jeter. And one is owned by Peter Rokich, which is the one we have right here. If you see, Mariano Rivera has an autographed baseball right here. And it's different from the other balls in this area, in that these baseballs are all autographed on what Peter Rokich referred to as the sweet spot, which is the typical area that a baseball is autographed.
Right between the seams.
Right between the seams. Thank you. If you look at Mariano's ball, though, it's not right between the seams. It's right under a seam on kind of the, I don't know how you'd refer to it. It's not in the typical area, though. And Peter told me this story that...
It's kind of, his signature goes in the deepest part of the horseshoe if you're looking at the baseball along the seams.
Peter told me how that came to be. He met with Mariano before Rivera was to pitch a game. Rivera was being groomed as a starter at this point in his career. So Rivera had showed up before the game to warm up, and he was sitting, and Peter Rokich came over to him and asked Rivera for an autograph, and Mariano said, sure, of course. So he signed it in the... And again, under the horseshoe there. And Peter said, why'd you sign it there? Why didn't you sign it in the sweet spot? And then he said, the sweet spot was for Bill. Now, Bill was Bill Evers, who was the manager of the Albany Colony Yankees at this time. Because what Rivera thought was that Rokich was getting the ball signed by the entire team. So he wanted to reserve the sweet spot for the manager, Bill. And then Peter Rokich said to Rivera, no, I just want your autograph on the baseball. And Rivera couldn't believe it. He said, just me? He could not believe that anyone would just want his autograph on a baseball. Now, of course, you know, there's a great many people who would want Mariano Rivera's autograph in any capacity on anything. So I just thought that was interesting because it demonstrated, again, it showed how, you know, Mo is still a humble player even today, but he was, you know, he especially had it then as well. So
let's talk about the most depressing era of my childhood, which was the post AC Yankees period. The team left and we got the Diamond Dogs, and the Diamond Dogs were great, but they weren't quite the AC Yankees. We went from Double A to Independent League.
No, it was not. It wasn't the same in that sense. You were looking at players who were not on a fast track to the major leagues. They were players who were really trying to get back into organized baseball, and the Diamond Dogs was there.
Sometimes major leaguers back on the way down, too.
This is a display dedicated to covering the De Beers Baseball Company, which was a local firm based originally in Johnstown that subsequently moved to Albany, and they made baseballs. What they became known for was making this particular type of softball known as the clincher that has a very distinctive zigzag stitching, which was used in a number of semi-professional and some professional games as well. Now, De Beers never became, you know, the huge a Maker baseballs. Like, I don't, they were used in, you know, smaller leagues. I don't think they were ever used in the major leagues, but, you know, they were a large firm in this area for something like Maker baseball. They had at one point, you know, 100, maybe 200 employees just, you know, stitching baseballs. And they have a connection with Chicago. They, in Chicago leagues, Chicago has amateur baseball and softball leagues, and they're kind of, they make a lot of the balls for them as well. But yeah, they were, it was just very interesting to learn about this firm here. And, you know, there's also like the Adirondack Bat Company in this area that made up Major League Baseball bats, and they actually were used by a lot of players. Most notably, Willie Mays used Adirondack bats for much of his career. But yeah, we have, you know, this kind of, this small industry and trade of baseball materials in this area, which was, you know, it's small, but, you know, it's interesting to learn about for sure.
Next to the clubhouse, baseball memorabilia.
One of the really cool things that we have on display in the clubhouse baseball memorabilia exhibit is a locker from Shea Stadium. And we also have a signed Tom Seaver's jersey from about 1971. It's been really neat. I mean, we obviously have some Mets fans in the area. But again, Tom Seaver, Hall of Famer. People have really enjoyed seeing the locker and his uniform as part of this show.
We're looking at a locker from Shea Stadium. It's got a lot of paint peeling and some hooks, and inside is hanging Tom Seaver's signed Mets 41 jersey and also his induction day program from his Hall of Fame induction in 92 and the 75 Mets official yearbook. Very cool.
We also have had people who are Yankees fans who wanted to contribute some materials. So we have some seats from Yankee Stadium. These are from 1923, the early stadium. We also have a large letter E from the facade of Yankee Stadium from a private collection.
This piece, I think, is... it's my favorite because it's just the rarest, I think. It's really an exceptional piece for this area. We've had people come in who are very knowledgeable just about baseball on a national scale, and they've been wowed by this piece. It's, again, 1917 World Series jersey worn by Melly Wolfgang. Special for that year because with the beginning of World War I, as you can see, it has this kind of patriotic motif that was intentional for the war effort. Well, the White Sox old uniform has SOX for Sox written out on the uniform. And the S is done in a stars and stripes motif with the blue and the white stars. It has the flag patch on the left sleeve and a flag patch on the right sleeve. And that was special uniform done for that year. I don't believe any other World Series uniform had that. So that makes it an even more exceptional rare piece just by virtue of having that. And the uniform itself is just in phenomenal condition. I mean, it doesn't look like it's aged a day. John Thorne, who is official historian for Major League Baseball, was here before the opening, and he said it looked like it just came from the cleaners, which I took as a testament to its condition, and I was very, very, very happy that we could have such a great piece as this for our show. So I think that's my favorite piece out of all of them here. This flag here is from an Orioles fan named Al DeSalvo, big Orioles fan. All the Orioles stuff here we have is from Al. And this flag, he told me, belonged to a friend of his who lived across the street from Old Memorial Stadium where the Orioles used to play. And if you look at the photograph on this opposite wall here, behind the stadium are a row of houses. And if you look very closely, you can see the house with this flag hanging outside. So we kind of have those next to each other.
Get out of here.
Oh, yeah.
Where is it?
You have to squint. Oh, where did he? Ah, right there. You see, there's a window there.
I see it.
There.
It's a
window, and then
maybe an eighth of an inch in this photo of Memorial Stadium. It's an overhead photo, probably taken from a blimp. And you can see a row house across the parking lot with the giant Orioles flag.
Yep. And he was quite tickled that he had Al was that he had this poster and the flag, and he said, you know, can you see this flag in the photograph? And originally I was looking in the stadium to see, you know, is it hanging from a flagpole or something? It's like, nope, it's across the street there. So you know, it's you got to squint, but you can see it. It's quite nice.
And the poster says this was taken from the last opening day at Memorial Stadium in 91 before the opening of Camden Yards, I guess.
Correct. And and related to Camden Yards, on this previous Sunday, one of the chief designers of that ballpark was here to talk about the kind of the evolution of the ballpark over the years and what a ballpark means to its surrounding community. So we were very fortunate to get her. Janet Marie Smith is her name. She's with the Dodgers now. But yeah, just to meet the one of the people responsible for ushering in this this era in ballparks that look back to what a ballpark used to be and moves beyond the kind of monolithic stadium was very, very interesting, particularly me, who's a fan of most of these new retro parks.
Triple Play, baseball at the Albany Institute, continues through July 26th. There's more information about the exhibit, a great photo gallery from WAMC News intern Michelle Keckie, and information about the museum's upcoming baseball events at WAMC.org.
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
I was already very excited for spring and baseball season, but now even more so. And thank you both so much for showing me around the baseball exhibit.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for coming and stopping by.
Yes, thank you.
With my thanks to All-Stars Tamas Groft, Anya Leader-Nagy, and Andrew Lang at the Albany Institute of History and Art, I'm Ian Pickus, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. His Uncle Sam. He left the Giants in an awful jam, but now he's back, and he's Leo's joy, and Willie's still a growing boy. Say hey,
say who?
Say Willie, say hey,
say who?
Swinging at the plate, say hey,
say who?
Say Willie, that Giants kid is great, that Giants kid is great. Say Willie, what you gonna say? We'll be right back.